What's up, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to Fan Culture. This is the fifth episode. We got Carl here. We got Sakani here, all the way from New York. How's it going, Sakani?
You're doing good.
Man,
how y'all doing?
We good, we good. We finally glad to have you here, man. We were hoping to have the whole squad.
I was going to say, I'm definitely glad to be here, finally. Been 5 weeks coming, but... happy to be here.
But you here now. But you here. We happy. Brandon is actually out. He is going to Coachella. Have fun. Be safe. Lightweight, jealous. You know, all that good stuff. But the show must go on, and we got a lot of good stuff to get into this week. Obviously, NBA playoffs. You know, the biggest story of the entire weekend. Man. We got a lot to break down there. A lot of matchups. A lot of surprises. Just some great drama going on in all the series right now. We got to shout out Tiger Woods for winning the Masters. Just a huge comeback for him.
Definitely.
Russell Wilson finally got
paid. Wonderful round of golf.
Yeah, wonderful round of golf. Wonderful. Russell Wilson finally got paid. So shout out Russell Wilson. We'll break that down a little bit. If anyone got a chance to see Ricky Rubio's quote-unquote defense against James Harden, we'll talk about that a little bit as well. We also had a poll go out from our last episode talking about if Russell Westbrook and Draymond Green were overrated. So we got the results coming back from that a little later. But first and foremost, let's get into these NBA playoffs. Like I said, it's been a crazy first round so far, and we're only, you know, pretty much one game in on all these series. So what series y'all want to start with first? All
right. You can start with that comeback win last night.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that. Might as well start with the top dogs.
All right, yeah. So let's start with the defending champs, the Golden State Warriors. I personally didn't watch the game last night. I actually checked in when it was like mid third quarter when they were up by about 30. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah. Nah, I'm good. Yeah. Did y'all watch the game all the way through?
I watched it from about halftime.
Man, I mean, 31 points. Obviously, everyone's making the reference to, you know, 3-1 lead that they blew. Do you guys think that was more about the Warriors blowing it, or was that the Clippers just coming back and earning that game?
I think it was both. I want to say it was about maybe 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter. KD fouled out. They also lost Boogie, and he might be out for the rest of the season. I'm sure he's out for the rest of the postseason.
Yeah, they confirmed it. So
I think that was around the time that where you saw the momentum shift in the game.
That was pretty early.
Yeah, so I mean the torn quad was early. That was in the first quarter, but you're talking about when KD fouled out, that kind of helped turn the tide
exactly.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I had hung out with, you guys are both familiar with, Justin Caldwell.
Yeah.
And we were breaking down like every single series, I say the night before. And he kept telling me, hey, the Clippers are going to get one. The Clippers go get one. And I kept telling him, honestly, I think the Clippers are going to get swept because I feel like the Warriors, when they go to Staples, it's pretty much going to feel like a home game. Like,
right.
Way too many Golden State fans for it not to be. I mean, of course, every time you put out a prediction, nobody's thinking, oh, what if this person gets hurt? What if this person fouls out of a game? They are a part of basketball, but nobody brings them up when you discuss predictions. He didn't say that. Like, oh, the Clippers are going to get one because somebody's going to foul out.
Right.
You know, we're just talking. But honestly, I had the Golden State Warriors sweeping them. I think to answer your question, when you go up by 31 points and you're already feeling like the team that you're playing is inferior to you, it's very easy to get complacent. And when you have a team full of dogs like the Clippers do, the last thing you need to get is complacent. The Golden State Warriors allowed for their talent to display for a majority of that game.
Mm-hmm.
It just so happens that in basketball, that switch can turn so fast, and the Clippers were able to come back. So I give the Clippers credit because just because they're now taking it easy doesn't mean that you always come back, because they could have come back and still lost by three, still lost
by six.
Sometimes
you can just run out of time.
Exactly. So the fact that they were able to not only catch up but go ahead and get the win, I can't do anything but give them credit. But I don't believe that they caught up to the best of the Warriors. I think they were getting their butts kicked by the Warriors' best.
Yeah.
And at some point, it was just...
Yeah. No, I agree. I think game two was looking a lot like game one. Mm-hmm. And it looked like that was just going to kind of be the tone of the series. You know, the Clippers are going to get hot at times. You know, they're going to make it physical, but eventually Golden State's going to prevail every single game. I definitely didn't think, and I kind of went back to watch the highlights. Golden State always needs this occasional wake-up call at some point, whether it's in the regular season to break out of a slump or it's, you know, a blowout in the playoffs or something like that. They always need something to wake them up. And I think this was it. You know, Golden State has committed 43 turnovers in the first two games of the series, which is insane. Most teams aren't going to win games like that. Yeah, no. But Golden State can make those mistakes and still win based off of talent alone. But once you get to playing, you know, right. But once you get to playing Houston, you get to playing Utah, Denver, OKC, or any of the top four teams in the East, more often than not, that's going to be a problem. You can't simply do that. You know, the Clippers don't have all the firepower to necessarily blow you out the water, you know, in a game like that or make you pay for all your mistakes. But I still think that this may ultimately backfire against the entire league. I know a lot of people are happy right now because, you know, the Warriors blew a lead, you know, the series is 1-1. I know everyone's thinking, obviously, the series is now going to be extended. I think there's like a 3-day difference if they would have swept them as opposed to playing in game five and winning.
Which really could have helped them in the second round versus the Warriors.
Right.
Versus the Rockets.
Versus the Rockets. Yeah, that's a three days of rest. But like I said, I think this may be a game that gives them, you know, their focus back. And now it may be a wrap for every team they play.
Honestly, somebody who I think needs to step up, somebody who needs to be criticized far more than he's ever been throughout his career, is Klay Thompson. And this is the reason why I never saw Klay Thompson leaving the Golden State Warriors. One, you're being paid an extraordinary amount of money. Even if you just compare it to other NBA players, he's still in a very low percentage of players who get that amount of money. You're on a team that's winning. And when you lose, nobody says anything about you. Yes, Kevin Durant went out with, you know, like Sakani said, about 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter. But Klay Thompson is still that guy that you look at like, oh, he should be an all-star or at least compete for an all-star spot. He's somebody who I said still gets paid a lot. He's still somebody who we regard as one of the greatest shooters of all time. One of the best defenders in the league at this time, a great two-way player, top five, possibly top three shooting guard in the league. And nobody says anything about him. You had 17 points last night.
A quiet 17.
Yeah. A quiet 17. But even so, if it was a loud 17, you had 17 points last night. You can get 30 and a quarter. You can have 60 on five dribbles. But when we need you to play, when Kevin Durant goes out, the guy who Draymond Green was so happy to remind, we had a championship before you got here. When he goes out, you got to do something. And you ain't do nothing, dog.
No, I'm 100% co-signed with Carl on that. Play has to be more aggressive. And we know that's not necessarily his game. His game type, you know, he's not going to be the one bringing the ball up the floor, attacking people. He's getting to position to be able to get his shot off. And so it's going to be, I don't know. I don't know if maybe teams are guarding them differently or guarding him differently. If I haven't necessarily looked at how they've been defending him. But either way, I think it's important for, yeah, Klay to get more involved. Show why, like you said, Carl, Draymond made the point to say we won one before you got here. Show people why.
I think Carl made a very good point that Klay doesn't get the proper criticism that he deserves. I mean, for someone to be so talented, like you said, 30 points in the quarter, you know, he can do that on the regular, you know, kind of when he wants to. We've always seen on the, you know, Warriors playoff runs that there's one game that they desperately need and Klay shows up.
Yeah.
So why can't he show up to stop the bleeding when necessary? You know, because people obviously, you know, Steph had a great game in game two, but he went ice cold in the fourth quarter. He was like 2-for-9 from the field.
And at that point, you got to do something.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it was between Klay, KD, and Steph. They went like 4 of like their last 19 shots or something like that. Right. Which is just unacceptable. But, you know, Klay is capable of doing a lot. And I feel like, obviously, with Boogie going out, Draymond's not someone to look to be a scorer. He's only going to make really your hustle plays. And then with KD has his own problems to deal with Patrick Beverley, obviously.
Yes.
It's time for Klay to show up. I mean, who's guarding you? You know, Landry Shamet, Lou Williams. Come on. That should be barbecue chicken.
Exactly. Especially, like you said, there's no DeMarcus in there. get down. You can hit a turnaround jumper from the block.
Yeah.
Take advantage of those smaller guards when they get up on you. If your three ain't falling, start moving around more. No, DeMarcus isn't there to set your screens, but you still got Looney, you still got Draymond, you still have Bogut. And these are players that you've played with before DeMarcus Cousins. So who was setting your screens for you then?
Right.
Why are you not able to get open now, get your shots down now? Like, you have to do something. But you went out with 4 minutes. You know, KD go out, Steph is cold. You got to find a way to step up, because as you stated, like, it started with Steph and Clay. It came Steph, Clay, Draymond. Your name is still mentioned, but your play ain't the same when it matters.
Right.
Like, okay, you got 60 whatever in three quarters. What did you do last night, man? And everybody ain't going, no, everyone isn't going to have a great game, but this seems to be a consistent thing when it comes to, like, when they lost to the Lakers in the regular season, they got blew out at home. Everybody talked about Steph's performance. Everybody talked about Kevin Durant's performance. Nobody brought up the fact that Klay had, like, I think he had like 9 points in that game or something. It was terrible.
And I think it's because people cut him some slack because, oh, well, he doesn't get the opportunities that he used to. Therefore, you don't expect the production that we've seen from him. And I think he gets a pass for that because you're deferring to Steph, you're deferring to KD.
I don't think we should, only because this is the same man who said in an interview when they asked him, well, how do you feel about sacrificing shots when Kevin Durant comes? And he looked in the camera and said, I ain't sacrificing expletive deleted. I ain't sacrificing nothing. All right. Well, he not on the floor. So what you doing?
How do you think that losing Boogie is going to affect the Warriors?
I'm going to say they got Bogut back right in time. I think they're not going to be able to stretch the floor as much as they had at one point. Not to say that it's not going to affect them because they're used to playing small ball and doing that anyway, but his presence in the middle is going to be obviously missed.
I think that obviously, you know, losing Boogie, he was averaging, I think, what, 20 and 10 pretty much,
yeah, kind of
in this last stretch of game. But I think that really outside of the scoring, they're going to miss his playmaking. They're going to miss his passing. He's a great passer. He's a very underrated passer. I remember watching game one. They were hitting the Clippers with a bunch of backdoor cuts, and it was usually Boogie, you know, that was the one giving the assist. So I think they're going to miss it from that standpoint. Defensively, however, not to say that it's an upgrade, but they're going to like having Bogut in there a little more and Looney in there a little more from a defensive standpoint.
Yes.
Which is why I said earlier that I think it may somewhat backfire against all of us that are, you know, waiting on the Warriors' demise, because what's made the Warriors so special over the years has truly been their defense. It's just the highlights are, you know, the crossovers and the threes and all that. Right. But it's really been their defense that's been the driving factor for all their fast break points, for, you know, all the highlight moves and stuff down the court. So if they can get their defense together, and if they can get back into being a top five defense, it's going to be problems for everyone. So before we move on to the next series, what do you guys think? Who finishes the series? Who wins the series? I think we probably all think Warriors, but how many games?
I'm afraid now.
You're afraid?
I'm not afraid that the Warriors are going to lose, but I'm afraid of five or six games. I'm shooting for five, but I wouldn't be afraid if it goes six, only because that's dangerous. You don't give a team like the Clippers confidence. It's one thing for them to walk into the series like, nah, we the Clippers. We know we are going to be able to get one. There's a difference between that and, nah, we beat y'all, so we know we can beat y'all now.
Right. Like,
we've already done it. And, you know, Kevin Durant gets ejected first game, fouls out second game. Are you going to be able to finish these games, man?
Hey, that's real. That's a very legitimate point. I say Warriors in five. I think they're going to have enough laser focus to get them through three games and be able to close the series out. So I'll say Warriors in five.
Because I want the best Warriors and I want the best Rockets. Mm-hmm. I want to repeat it last year. That was my finals.
Yeah. No, that was. That definitely was.
So I want the best.
Yeah.
That's why I'm hurt that DeMarcus Cousins isn't playing. Because I really, and I don't want that to be an excuse.
You got to feel bad for him because that's his second time missing the playoffs.
Yeah,
and his team's, you know,
right,
advancing.
Right. I'm a Kings fan, so I don't nobody feel worse for this man than I do. But I don't want that excuse of, hypothetically speaking, the Warriors do lose to the Rockets in the second round.
Oh, if they got Boogie.
Well, Boogie was hurt. I don't think it's going to stick as much only because y'all didn't have Boogie the year before when y'all beat him.
And the fact y'all have four other all-star players.
Technically.
Well, yeah.
That's kind of like saying the Clippers, I'm sorry, not the Clippers, the Cavaliers had nine all-stars because Darren Williams was there, Derrick Rose was there, and Isaiah Thomas was there.
They did.
Like, man, all-star
They had four all-stars from 2 years ago.
All right, cool.
Yeah. Sakani, what you think?
So why don't we count
I'm
Iggy?
Also going Warriors in five.
Warriors in five? All right. You said, why don't we count Iggy?
Didn't Iggy make an all-star team in Philly
back in the day?
So they got five all-stars, or six,
that was,
right?
That was more than 2 years ago. It's a two-year time window where you can say all-star, okay. Or all-star caliber at least, you know?
All right, yeah. But Sakani, I'm sorry, you said five or six?
I said five.
Five, all right.
So I think they're going to get it together.
So Carl, you going to make a pick, or are you thinking 4 years, five, six, seven, eight, nine?
I'm going to say six.
Six?
Okay. I want five, but I'm going to say six because I slept on the Clippers getting a win last time. So I'm going to say maybe they get one more at home.
So we'll stick in the West. Let's go to the number two seed, Denver Nuggets. Obviously matched up against the seventh seed, San Antonio Spurs. So game two is going on.
They're down right now.
Yeah, so game two is going on right now, and the Nuggets are down by how much?
I want to say eight.
Okay.
Eight. Oh, they creeping.
Yeah, so we know how game one turned out. So San Antonio pulled off the road win against Denver. Who'd you guys pick to win the series?
Oh, halftime, 10, 59, 49.
Yeah, they're up 10 now. Yeah.
I had the Nuggets winning in a 6-7. That's what I had.
So Connie, what'd you have?
I have Spurs in 7.
The subjective fan that I am of the Spurs had me saying 6. Spurs in 6. The realistic part of me, objective, thought Nuggets in 7.
Mm-hmm.
The reason being is because the Spurs have been just god awful on the road. I mean, they've been bad on the road.
Right.
One of the best home teams. I think they had one of the best 5 home records in the league.
Yeah.
But I just didn't think that they were going to be able to steal 1 or 2 games on the road. But I know they're capable of it because people act like the Spurs are just chumps because they don't have Kawhi. They have 2 all-star caliber players on their squad still and growing young players that people don't know about.
I was frustrated by the fact that people made like preseason predictions about playoffs and they did not have the San Antonio Spurs going. DeMar DeRozan can ball.
Exactly. So like he didn't just average like 26 a game. Yeah.
And he showed that he can actually adjust. 1 year you average 27-3. The next year you average like 24-5. I'm scoring less, but I'm passing more because what I did last year didn't work. So let me try something different.
Right.
He can like, how do you not look at somebody like that who's going to play with LaMarcus Aldridge, who knows this system, who's succeeded in this system, who succeeded prior to this system in Portland? Of course they're going to make the playoffs.
Right.
Now, I was worried earlier in the season when they lost DeJounte Murray, and it just looked like they couldn't get it together. It just seemed like it just wasn't clicking. But no, I definitely had them going to the playoffs. I definitely think it's going to be a hard-fought series. I don't trust Denver past the first round. I think next year when they get Michael Porter Jr. back, I think they're going to be extremely dangerous. You know, you move him into the starting lineup. I hope they can keep Paul Millsap, but you move him into the starting lineup as either a stretch 4 or as a 3, possibly bring Will Barton off the bench, which can just make your bench a little bit stronger, him, Malik Beasley, players like that. I think next year is going to be a year that they can possibly go to the Western Conference Finals. This year, if they lose in the first round, I think it would definitely be no less than 6 games, which I wouldn't be mad at because I like the Spurs anyways, but I do have them winning about 7.
I'd say Spurs in 7.
Spurs in 7. I mean, personally, I've always thought the Nuggets to me have been one of the most frustrating teams in the league. And the reason being is because they play up to competition. I mean, they can compete with the best of everyone in the league, but I've seen them play down to competition so much. And I've seen them lay, you know, just flat out lay an egg in so many different matchups where it's like, okay, can I truly believe in you? You know, like, how could I expect you in a 7-game series to be you know, consistent. You know, I think people forget that they went from, you know, barely missing the playoffs, you know, last season to all of a sudden now being the number two seed. Are they ready for that? You know, how much?
I don't think they are.
Yeah, I don't think they are. You know, coaching matters in the league as well. I think Mike Malone is a good coach. I think definitely think he's a good coach. But when you're talking about comparing him against, you know, Pop and Steve Kerr, right, and Doc Rivers and other guys like that, yeah, it's levels to this coaching stuff. So I don't know about you guys, but I've always thought that Denver's been a little overrated and they're not quite ready yet.
Yeah, that's why I said, yeah, I don't feel like I trust them. But another thing, Jokic can be your best player, but somebody got to be your highest scorer. Like, okay, let him get his, you know, 13, 14, and 7, but you got to go get 25, Murray.
Yeah, don't expect 25 from Jokic every night.
Harris, you got to go get 27. Paul Millsap, you got to be you of Utah. Like, one of y'all got to do something in regards to getting buckets. You just let him play. Let him be the best player on the floor overall. Let him be your Westbrook, but who going to be Paul George?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they have that established yet, but I think Michael Porter Jr. can be that guy. Like, I really think he's going to be something special.
Yeah.
So that's why I think they're going to be better suited next year for this time than they are this year. I just don't trust those other guys to be that best player, mm-hmm, or at least that consistent score that they're going to need to complement Jokic and his all-around game.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that.
I was surprised by them this year as well. I think that I feel like I'm going to be repeating a lot of what's already been said, but I feel like they're a young team going up against guys with playoff experience, especially with the squad that San Antonio has. These guys they've been here, they've done this. Just like you said, there's levels to this coaching game, there's just as much level to this player's game and knowing what it's like to make deep runs and what it takes to make deep runs. And I just don't think that Denver's going to be ready for that just yet. Has Paul Millsap made it out of the second round before?
Was he on that Western Conference team that went? Was he on the team that went to the Western Conference with Utah when Deron Williams went? Because I know it was like Utah, and I think either the year before or the year after, it was the Denver Nuggets
when
they went up against Kobe.
Wasn't he part of that team in Atlanta?
He was.
That made the Eastern Conference Finals, or no?
Did they make the Eastern Conference?
No, he wasn't there yet. Remember the year they got swept? But I don't think
he was there.
He was
wasn't
there.
He? It was him, Al Horford.
I thought Kyle Korver.
Kyle Korver.
Yeah, I thought he was on that team, but that's been the furthest that he's gone for sure, and that was a quick trip too.
True.
But
what year was this?
2014, 2015.
Yeah, because I remember they won like 60 games that year.
Okay, so that was Budenholzer's first year.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah, he was there. He was there from 13 through 17.
Okay, yeah, so he was on that Eastern Conference Finals team. Yeah, so, I mean, he's really the only one that truly has experience, you know. Mm-hmm. IT coming off the bench has experience as well.
I think he's, you know, is he playing?
I haven't really seen him.
I heard they, like,
sent
him home a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, he's kind of taken his way out of the rotation.
Yeah, which,
that's wild.
Yeah, but I mean, and we can talk about that another time too. Just the demise of IT, just the fall has been so. It's literally been a free fall.
Whole episode to that.
There needs to be a 30 for 30 on IT,
definitely.
Like, because I mean, part of it is his doing, but part of it was just kind of due to tragedy and just ill timing. So part of me feels bad for him, but then, you know, other parts are like, he just always thought that he was larger than life, even at 5'8".
Yeah, he definitely had an ego larger than his measuring height.
Yeah. Man, so, I mean, the Denver and San Antonio series has definitely been great. But I think we're kind of all on the same page that we think that San Antonio is going to win this series.
Well, I still got Denver right now.
Oh, you still got Denver right now. You said Denver in 7, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
It's
so
bad, though. But I just don't want to fade away from that yet.
Yeah. I mean, we'll revisit it next week. Obviously, we'll have a little more insight and, you know, kind of see really where the series is truly going. Other series to talk about in the West, OKC and Portland. What you guys think about that series so far?
I love the point guard matchup.
Yeah. They go at it.
I feel like both teams are in a must-win situation. Portland needs to redeem themselves for the loss that they took last year to the New Orleans Pelicans. It's one thing to get beat. It's another thing to get swept. Yeah, when you, what were they, third last year? It was the
same. Yeah, they were third. Yeah,
they were third again last year. Swept. That's sad. Especially when there's no DeMarcus. So you got beat by Rondo, Miritich. Drew Holiday, Miritich. But yes, that you have to redeem that. You cannot go out in the first round. But with OKC, with the season that Paul George was having, you know, prior to his injury, being top three at one point, it seemed like he may have even been top two in MVP considerations. You got to make sure that was worth something.
Yeah.
Russell Westbrook, you still got to prove that you are a superstar. You're averaging triple doubles. You guys are winning games, but where are you traveling to? Where are you going in the postseason? You went far. You went all the way to the finals with Kevin Durant. You really want to be your own man. You got to do something. And even beyond that, you guys won one more game than you did last season with Carmelo Anthony. Mm. Last year, you made it to the playoffs with Carmelo Anthony. What can you do without him if he was really the problem? I got to see something from both of these teams. So I honestly couldn't pick because I just feel like both of them have to win. So it's hard for me to say which one will.
I didn't want to pick for the same reasons because I want both these teams to succeed, but I do have OKC going through in six.
I had OKC in six as well. I've always had this love-hate relationship with Portland, and the reason being is because obviously we acknowledge and we, you know, respect the play of CJ McCollum and of Damian Lillard, but I've always had this feeling that they're like the Raptors of the West, you know what I mean? Where they're gonna be great in the regular season. They're gonna put up numbers. Dame's gonna look great. He's gonna look like, hey, is he first team all NBA? You know, CJ's gonna do his thing. The rest of the team is gonna play well during the regular season, but come playoff time, for some reason, they just cannot get it together. Sometimes it's just who you're matched up against, and sometimes that team is just a hard matchup for you. And then there are other times where it's literally you're just not showing up to play. And, you know, you can never really predict what Portland's going to do. And that's what makes it so frustrating. You know, obviously they won game one. And I think that was a huge step in the right direction for them, because had they come out and lost game one at home to OKC, I think that a lot of people would have been like, oh Lord, here we go again. You know what I mean? Yeah, and I think even that mentality, obviously that mentality gets to the fans, and I think that was going to kind of, you know, disseminate into the players' mentality as well. You know, when you go through these struggles every single year, it, you know, you start to, you know, think, hey, well, are we cursed, or, you know, what exactly is the deal? So I think it was good for them to get that first win, but this could probably still go six or seven, and I'm still leaning towards OKC in six. Yeah, so we'll jump over to Houston and Utah then.
Houston in five.
I'm gonna go Houston in six. Utah does their thing. Utah's a tough team. They're not as efficient offensively this year as they were last year. I think they were more dangerous last year than they are this year.
You know, I'm sorry, that is not what I said. I actually said Houston in six. What I said was Houston's going to get the first two at home. Utah is going to get their two at home. And then Houston is going to win the following two. One in Houston, one in Utah. Mm. So I'm sorry, Houston in six.
I think Houston in five. I don't know. I'm really just thinking about how inconsistent I've seen Utah this year. And as much as, if we're going to go back to that Ricky Rubio defense that they're playing, if their solution is to try to make James Harden take a bunch of shots and, you know, not get the rest of the team involved, however they plan on, we'll have to see how they adjust for game two, honestly. I think that'll really solidify in my mind the direction I think the series will go. I feel like I wanted to say Houston in six, but after this first game and how handily they won, I don't know if being at home is going to be that much of an advantage for Utah.
I'm worried about Donovan Mitchell. Did he peak too early?
I don't think so.
I feel like when you peak in your development, it's not always based off of your play and your production. I think sometimes it starts to come down to who your teammates are, the system that you're a part of. And I think that it seems like Utah's offense hasn't evolved since he's emerged, and it needs to, so that you can cater to his strengths. And I feel like they've still been playing the same system when they did when he was a rookie and he was kind of on the come up and started to emerge as, you know, a future star. And I feel like they haven't made the necessary adjustments since. So it seems like he's peaking, but he's not getting the greater opportunities that he's shown that he deserves based off of his talent, based off of his production. Right. And I feel like that's giving us the facade as, oh, well, Donovan Mitchell's peaking. You know, he's not really doing what he's supposed to do. He's not, you know, taking over games and things like that. So I think that's more so coaching in the system as opposed to Donovan Mitchell just not showing up.
Because, I mean, you look at you look at their team, you look at, okay, you got like an all-around, to a degree, all-around point guard in Ricky Rubio, defensive specialist based on the way he was guarding James Harden on that play. Donovan Mitchell, I mean, it's the biggest weakness I see with him is his efficiency. Mm-hmm. You know, low 40s. But aside from that, it's like he can do everything. He can play defense. He set the record last year for the most threes made by a rookie, so he can shoot. We all know he's crazy athletic, you know, good strength. Like, he can play basketball and do pretty much everything. You look at a Joe Ingles, underrated player, shooter. You know, he definitely put himself on a lot of people's radar. You definitely have to look for him when you're game planning. Jay Crowder, very tough guy, like a football player on the field, just gonna do a little bit of everything for you. Rudy Gobert, arguably the best defensive center in the league, if not hands down the best defensive center in the league. So it's like, you look at their starting five at the least, you don't really see too many weaknesses. If anything, okay, maybe they need a little more shooting. But I mean, that's what you have bench players for. But they're solid, you know, that starting five is solid. I feel like the only thing that they need to be great is for Donovan Mitchell to be great. And I just don't know if maybe I've already seen the best of him. I mean, yes, sometimes it can come down to just exchanging this player for this player, this style for that style. But I don't know. Just the fact that he's already pretty much good at everything, and it's not really easy to, we'll just become more efficient. Yeah, that worked for Allen Iverson. That worked for Kobe Bryant. Like, so sometimes you just can't get that 48-49%.
Right. So do you think that he's practically peaked and he's now going to be like a fringe all-star every year? Or
honestly, yes, especially if he stays in the Western Conference. I think he'll be looked at. I don't think he'll ever be voted in as long as he stays in the West, especially in Utah. Right. I don't think he'll ever be voted as a starter. I think he's going to have some 24, 25 point per game years to be voted in as a bench player.
Right.
And I don't know if he can get that high.
Wait, you don't think so in like maybe 5 years when, you know, Steph is not likely going to be at 35, you know, the perennial all-star that he... I mean, you don't think he can make his way up to being a starter in 5 years?
Mm-mm. Honestly, I see him settling in like a CJ McCollum, a Bradley Beal. Like, you know they're good, but like...
I was just going to say...
Like, how great are you going to... I mean, maybe it might be a bad comparison only because those guys play next to guards who are better than them and viewed as like the franchise player.
Yeah.
But it's just something about Donovan Mitchell that I love, but it's something about him that I don't trust in regards to just growth.
I mean, I think that he definitely has the potential to be, you know, a top three shooting guard in the league for years to come. You know, when you think of up-and-coming shooting guards, you know, you think of Devin Booker. Klay for the next 5 years is probably still going to be, you know, in that caliber. Bradley Beal will be somewhere in the conversation, probably top five. CJ. But I think Mitchell in a couple of years has the potential to be, you know, in that top three, you know, undisputed. But I think, like you said, it is a matter of how and where and when he peaks.
Yeah.
You know, because when you peak early, you're going to be forgotten about, you know. People want to see the constant progression in that year of eruption like Giannis. You know what I mean? people are going to want to see that year from Donovan Mitchell, where it's like, okay, he's coming out with 26-5-5.
Yes.
They don't want to see the constant, you know, 21 points, you know, 4 boards, 3 assists. And that's honestly not going
to
cut
think
it.
That's what is, I think he's going to straddle between 20 to 22 and a half, get his 4 boards, 4 assists.
Right.
And I think he's just going to remain a consistent player. I think he's always going to be relevant. I can see the Utah Jazz being a long-time playoff team with mm-hmm. him being a star. I just don't think he'll ever emerge as, oh no, he's like an all-star every right. single year. I think at some point he's just going to settle it. Like, it took people a very long time. And if it does happen, it might take a long time. Like, it took people a while to notice Kemba Walker.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the people that he was drafted with. Nobody cares about Brandon Knight. Jimmer Fredette, like, wasn't even in the league, and then Phoenix said, forget it. Let's just pick him up because we tanking anyways. You know, these are players that Kemba Walker was drafted with, and people are just now talking about Kemba Walker 2 years ago. I mean, like, we that came out crazy.
I mean, you...
But, yeah, like, we talked about Donovan Mitchell last year because, you know, you got to pick a rookie of the year.
Yeah.
And he was playing well. He was playing well. Jason Tatum was playing well. Ben Simmons was playing well. We looked at it like, oh, maybe this is those guys, LeBron and
right.
them. But I don't know. I feel like he just didn't do anything special this year, and I'm afraid that this is the type of career we're going to see from him.
I think they're all valid points, but I think he's going to emerge into that top three. I'll give him the next couple of years for that. If he doesn't emerge and solidify himself in that top five, I think he will have, there will be that fear of him falling into the underrated group where they don't quite get the respect that they ever deserve.
Yes.
And when I think of like CJ, for example, I feel like CJ's falling into that trap.
Yeah.
Because CJ hasn't been an all-star, right?
No.
Not yet. Dame is starting to get his shine, and I think it's going to end up being
much more about Dame than it is. Times.
Right, right. So eventually, you know, CJ's going to be 30, then 32, then 33, then are you going to be considered, you know, a top three, top exactly. four shooting guard in the league?
And then we're looking at him like we're looking at Monte Ellis, Rudy Gay, Kevin Martin. These are the highest scoring players of all time to never win an All-Star. I mean, sorry, to never be voted to CJ be selected
will,
as an All-Star.
CJ will just be known as a walking bucket.
Yes.
But never well respected as, you know, a shooting guard.
You know who was good?
Yeah,
CJ
right.
was cold, but it's like, all right.
He's always going to be spoken as one of those, you know, who never got the respect they deserve?
Exactly.
One of those type players.
Yes.
Exactly. And, you know,
I have to go back and look at their numbers to be reminded of how good they were.
You know, probably the shooting guard position is like the most shallow position in terms of depth throughout mm-hmm. the league, but that top tier is pretty good.
I mean, yeah, we touched on that last week when we were talking about Dwayne Wade and the jersey and mm-hmm. where does he rank all time. Like we said, just those elite shooting guards, it's not that high. It's not that many.
Yeah, no, it's not. But the ones that are up there, they're up there with the greatest, regardless of position.
Right.
So, yeah, no, that series should be interesting, but I definitely got, I think I got Rockets in six. Carl, you said Rockets six. In six. Sakani, you said Rockets in five.
Wow, yeah.
All right, so that wraps up the whole entire West. So let's jump over to the East. Honestly, I don't even feel like we really need to talk about Milwaukee and Detroit.
No. Okay. This is what I said before the series started.
Because Blake's hurt too, right?
Yeah, he hasn't played yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that Blake wasn't going to play, but I said if Blake plays, I think he's good enough to get Detroit one game.
No, I agree.
I think people still don't recognize how good he is.
He's another one.
Yeah, he is.
High praise coming out. You don't win anything in the West. You go to Detroit. Who talks about Detroit? So, yeah. But I thought that they might get one, but it's looking... With no Blake, oh, yeah, it's a clean sweep.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Sakani, clean sweep?
Yeah.
Pretty clear. And it's unfortunate because I think Blake deserved to show on the main stage that he has improved. He's not the same Blake Griffin from his days in LA. You know, I think we may have talked about it last week, but Blake Griffin has the third most step back threes in the league this year. behind James Harden, and I forgot who the second person is, but Blake Griffin is third. He hit like 80 or 90 step back threes this year.
What, James have like 450?
I was not aware.
1,000. Yeah, I mean, it's just an insane stat to know.
Yeah, Blake is still day to day at the moment.
If he don't make it back in two games, it's a wrap. It's gonna be a clean sweep.
Yeah, he definitely can get back too late.
That's pretty clear. You know, Bucks. We'll see you in the next round there. So let's go to the two seed.
Toronto versus Orlando.
So that game's going on right now. Does anyone know the score?
No, it's over. Toronto won by 29.
Should have won by 59 after losing in the first game.
Yeah,
that hurt my heart.
Man, that was so brutal.
That made me happy for Orlando, though, just as an organization that they could have won, because I know they're not winning another game in this series. At least,
honestly, I don't care enough about Orlando or their franchise. I was upset because I have Toronto going to the finals, and it just looked bad for my prediction. But yeah. I have Toronto going because it sounds weird because of the way that they lost. It's not like somebody didn't play. You just didn't play well. Kyle Lowry was terrible. But I just feel like I trust Toronto more than I trust Milwaukee. I trust Giannis. I don't trust Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And I definitely trust Toronto. But that series, I got five.
What makes you trust Toronto more?
Toronto, for me, has more depth. You look at Kawhi Leonard. He's already been to the finals, already won. I don't agree with the finals MVP, so I don't like bringing it up or bragging about it. I think Tim Duncan still should have got it. 15-10 over 17-5. I'm sorry. And even if you did guard LeBron, you had 30 on 50% shooting. So what did you do? Danny Green, great locker room presence, great shooter, still can defend. Danny Green is one of the original 3-and-D guys for me in this new era of basketball. I just don't remember them talking about 3-and-D when it was Bruce Bowen, and 3-and-D when it was Ron Artest in Indiana. Like, when you really start talking about, oh no, we just need a 3-and-D guy, because I feel like Danny Green is like one of the forefathers of that.
I feel like the old 3-and-Ds, because you brought up Bruce Bowen. Bruce Bowen was literally defense and corner threes
exactly.
only.
Exactly.
He just literally stood in the corner offensively.
Like, you're not running, you run a play for Danny Green to come off a screen for a three. It's a little different. But yes, I trust Toronto more. Kyle Lowry has always been inefficient, but he's always been a dog on defense, and he's always been capable of hitting big shots. So I don't trust him throughout the entire 48 minutes, but if I know it's a tight game and something needs to go down, he's capable of making that shot.
Right.
The addition of Marc Gasol, his experience, his defense, his intelligence, Serge Ibaka, his defense, his shot-making ability, which started in OKC, which he's brought to Toronto, the young guys, Siakam. Anunoby didn't play in the first game.
Mm-hmm. He had an appendix.
Yeah, I probably butchered his name. Van Vliet, love Van Vliet. The addition of Jeremy Lin, I don't think he played in the first game either, but their team is just solid to me. Milwaukee, outside of Giannis, I don't trust anybody.
I like Malcolm Brogdon, but he's not.
I don't think he's going to beat anybody.
Right, yeah. He's not the biggest cog in their machine or their second star, you know, like a Chris Middleton, for example.
And then they kind of lost length, no Thon Maker. Mm. I think they traded John Henson.
Yeah, John Henson isn't there anymore. Yeah,
so it's they're length and, you add a Brook Lopez, but he's never been a rebounder.
Yeah.
Never been a solid defender. Eric Bledsoe, I don't really trust.
He could shoot 30-foot threes, though.
No, I like that. I do like Blake offensively, but
Brooke.
I'm sorry. Yeah. We're talking about Blake. Yeah, I do like Brooke offensively, but even Eric Bledsoe, little LeBron. You haven't been little LeBron since your first year with Phoenix, but that was a bust. That was terrible.
His best years were practically with the Clippers.
Yeah.
As a backup.
You were great behind or playing with Chris Paul, but on your own, it's just, all right, you can play, but that's all. And I really just don't trust him. Chris Middleton was an all-star. Yes, he can play, but kind of like Malcolm Brogdon, I just don't see you being responsible for a win. It's all on Giannis. If I shut everybody down and I let Giannis get his 29-14, but I have a Kawhi who can get me 30, and I have a Kyle Lowry who's not going to score zero every game, and everybody else who I trust just to do your part, I think Toronto has a better chance of beating everybody. than Milwaukee does.
So, Sakani, I know you mentioned that, you know, you think that Orlando's probably going to win this the game one. Who do you have as the favorite in the East? Do you have Toronto as a favorite in the East?
I got Brooklyn.
Hey, you in New York right now, yeah, man. I was going to say, for it, bro.
He thought this was fire takes only.
Man, he's shouting out my next location.
Yeah, y'all got to come on out here. But no, I do have Toronto as well coming out the East. It's either Toronto or Philly. The thing is,
Wait, you said Philly?
Looking at Philly's lineup on paper, there's no reason why they shouldn't be in the Eastern Conference Finals. But once again, I don't feel like their team is gelling the way that they should. Same way, I feel the same way about Philly as I do about Boston.
Oh yeah, that's been a problem for Boston all season.
I can't put my faith in either of those two teams. Giannis, unless he's planning on LeBroning the Bucks to the finals, I don't know if he has enough firepower around him either, enough of a supporting cast to be able to carry them through an experienced team like Toronto, as you said, Carl. I'm there with you. I got Toronto coming out the East.
Right now, I've got Toronto coming out of the East as well, but I have my concerns. Nick Nurse appears to be a good coach, but we don't know how he's going to be in a 7-game series against Boston, against Philly, against Milwaukee, where literally one mistake can doom you for the entire series.
Yes.
So I have that question mark when it comes to Nick Nurse, but he's shown me nothing but good things so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those you got to prove it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I can't say he can't do it because I haven't seen it yet. He has to prove to me that he can't do it, and then I'll say you can't do it.
Yeah.
But I definitely think they're the favorite almost by default. Because, yeah, you know, Giannis has had a great year, but I think we've all kind of agreed, you know, we have question marks when it comes to the role players. As funny as it sounds, even with Lowry scoring 0 points, which I think is just insane, when you're the second best player on the team, there's literally no way that you score 0 points in a game. Like, you can't make a free throw. You can't get to the free throw line. He should have literally had...
He did go off today.
He did go today?
He went off today.
Okay, well, good. So he's...
Yeah,
I don't know what it is with game one. Like, you know it's coming, so why? It's not like it's a surprise. Like, oh dang, it's game one. Like, ooh. Like, I don't know what the deal is, but
oh snap, they got a game today,
right? Like,
oh snap, they got a basketball court.
I don't know. Are they in like a different like day zone or something up in Toronto? Like, yo, I thought our game was tomorrow, not today. Like,
it's possible.
I don't know. Something's going on.
I mean, yeah, that, honestly,
on.
There's no
one thing. One thing that just kind of popped in my mind. Human, there's no telling. He could have gotten into an argument. He could have got bad
every
news.
Year though.
Somebody could have died
every year.
No,
on
I'm
game
talking
one.
About just for that game. Ain't no telling what happened. Because
he's got a history of not showing up in game one of, you know, any
what?
Series.
Kyle, I tried. I tried to excuse
you,
him.
You just you got. Know what? You're right. You just got to do better. Right. I mean, he just got to do better. Yeah. So we all think Toronto's gonna win this series, pretty much in five. Mm-hmm. I'd say Toronto in five. I think. That was the last time that Orlando's going to get, you know, a game in this series.
Oh, yeah. They're not winning another game until next
for
season.
Sure.
Yeah. No, that's real. But shout out Orlando for winning that game one. That's been probably one of the best games of the playoffs so far. So good job and come back next season even better.
Exactly.
So next we got to talk about Philly and Brooklyn. This has been just a seesaw, you know, series so far. Obviously, Brooklyn won in convincing fashion in game one. Game two, Philly blew him out of the water and scored 145 points. So what are the reads that you guys even get when it comes to these two teams in this series? Like, how do you even think it's going to play out?
With Philly, it just kind of shows that Joel Embiid is definitely the driving force of that team. For anybody who questioned who was top dog, whether it was him, Jimmy Butler, or Ben Simmons, I don't think they should have lost game one. I understand that Brooklyn has been a pleasant surprise for the NBA. It's definitely good for New York, because when you have two teams and both of them are bad, it's just kind of like, come on now.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it was definitely good for them. I mean, you think about the NBA right now, both little brother teams are the ones that succeed.
Are better than the
Clippers,
marquee teams.
Yeah, yeah, Nets. So I love that. I love the fact that they made it, but when you're Philly, and you have Eastern Conference. What's the word that I'm thinking of?
Eastern Conference Finals caliber players.
Britain, you don't lose game one at home to a team like Brooklyn with no star. Now, maybe we're just underrating D'Angelo Russell, which is possible. Just because we don't call you a star doesn't mean that you aren't one. You know, we don't literally, you know, make up how good somebody is. Somebody's that good.
Yeah.
We just label him that. But he could be that person right now, which is why they may not need a superstar this offseason, but that's a completely different topic. But I just feel like...
KD to the Nets?
Hell no. But I just feel like Jimmy Butler, you should have been able to counter that. You should have got something done. I don't care about Ben Simmons not being able to shoot a jumper. You still got to find a way to put the ball in the hole.
Yeah.
Jump shots are not the only way to score. Right. And plus, you're a playmaker. So, okay, if you're not scoring, find a way for someone else to.
Jimmy Butler did his thing in game one, though. He had 34 points.
Yeah, but you didn't have 44.
44 wouldn't have even helped. I mean, part of it has to come down.
You know how bad that sounds. Right.
Yeah, but Ben Simmons... And Ben Simmons showed up in game two. So shout out Ben Simmons.
Until Ben Simmons develops his jump shot, can we really consider him to be one of the best players on that team?
On that team, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I would still consider him one of the best. I think he's still part of that big three.
Well, yes. That's not how I should have said that. Is he going to be held liable for... not producing in losses, meaning like, is he going to be held liable for not showing up?
Yes.
And putting up, you know, 30 points because he doesn't have that jump shot? Because I feel like he should be able to do those types of numbers, but we don't see him tapping into that part of the game.
I would say he still has to be held accountable for it because LeBron didn't have a jump shot for years and he was still held accountable for every single performance that he had. You know, DeAndre Jordan with his free throw shooting, he was held accountable for not being able to shoot, and that impacted the team as a result because now you can't have your rim protector on the floor because you can't shoot free throws. So, I mean, I think that your deficiencies, you know, Andre Roberson was another one as well, where he couldn't shoot and couldn't even shoot free throws. He couldn't do anything other than defend.
Watching him at the free throw line was just sad.
It was painful. It was really painful to watch.
What's wrong with your shoulders? What is wrong with you?
Right. But, I mean, I think... with Ben Simmons, knowing that he's so talented in all these other aspects, I don't think that gives him a pass, but I think that it just further amplifies, dude, you don't realize if you had a consistent 15-foot jump shot, the Sixers would be a favorite.
Oh, yeah.
They'd be the favorite, like without a doubt. Yeah. So you can now look at Ben and make a legitimate argument, whether it's true or not, that he's holding the Sixers back.
To a degree, yes, especially offensively, when you look at them and you see it's a lot of games where you'll see him in the post more than Joel Embiid. And I just don't think your point guard should be in the post more than your center. Now, even if you reverse it, center's in a post, point guard's out there at the three-point line. So somebody has to be able to shoot. So if the center is the one that can shoot, you put him out there. But I just like Joel Embiid on the block a little bit better. Ben, I definitely think he's going to be held responsible. I think rightfully so. One, you were the number one overall pick. Two, you were hyped as the number one overall pick. Three, you came into the league and showed that you were talented. You were the rookie of the year. So, yes, we expect for you to work and develop a jump shot like a LeBron James, like a Deshaun Stevenson, who out of nowhere just became a three-point shooter, like a Rajon Rondo, who you look at and say, he may still have a reputation, but if you look at his numbers, it's not that bad.
He knocks shots down now.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
he can knock them down in rhythm.
Yeah.
So at some point, I'm not tripping on it because it's still early. Mm-hmm. And it took those guys time as well. So I'm not going to be one of those critics that's just on him like, oh, he can't shoot, he can't shoot, he can't shoot. So what? But I think at some point he would need to develop that.
But I asked that in... I mean, with that team that they have this year, this might be one of their best opportunities to be able to make it to the finals. And so, because we don't know if Jimmy Butler will be there next year. We don't know if Tobias Harris will be there next year.
I don't know if Jimmy Butler is best for that team.
So if both of those guys are gone, for sure. But either way, for him to not be able to provide offensive numbers, it makes me wonder if this team would be better if he was able to put up numbers the same way Jimmy can, the same way Joe.
Well, I mean, of course, if you make someone more talented, that does make your team better. But I don't feel like it's completely necessary, only because when you really look at it, if we flip it around, if Ben Simmons could shoot and Joel Embiid could not, you still have four people on the outside, one person in the middle. I just like the center being in the middle. I just like the idea of it. But when you have a 6'10 point guard who's the size of a center in the post, and then you have a Jimmy Butler who can shoot, a Tobias Harris who can shoot, a JJ Redick who can shoot, a Joel Embiid who can shoot all around the three-point line, what's really the difference? You still got four out, one in, and the one who's in might be the best passer on the team.
I think the Sixers, and this part of this is on Brett Brown, obviously, but I think the Sixers need to have more motion in their offense so that, when the ball is in Ben Simmons' hands and he's in the post or kind of in the mid-range area, you can't just, you know, sink down and just focus on him. If you have Tobias Harris or you have Jimmy Butler cutting through the lane, wait, now I got to react to, you know, Jimmy Butler going right in the lane. Do I, you know, commit to that? And do I, you know, help off of Joel Embiid? Do I help off of JJ Redick? Do I help off of Tobias Harris? Someone's going to get an open shot, or, you know, they're not going to commit. And, you know, Ben Simmons is going to be able to do whatever he wants down in the post and make his moves.
If I'm playing a point guard, I'm going against somebody smaller than me. Joel Embiid's a center. He's going up against the tallest person on the opposing team. So it should be easier for Ben Simmons. And like you stated, if you just put a little more motion with those other four guys, I'm also the best passer out here. So right. I can play make from this position as well as score.
He'll be able to pass from anywhere on the floor to anywhere on the floor.
Right. So I don't think that him not being able to shoot should be as crippling as it has been, or has, you know, it appeared to be, you know, based on like other commentary and stuff like that. I think it can work. I think it should work. I think a lot of it is on Brett Brown. I don't know whether he's going to be there for the future or not. And another thing that I was paying attention to, because we did talk about the game, Joel Embiid 23, Ben Simmons 18, Tobias Harris 19, JJ Redick 17, Jimmy Butler 7.
Mm-hmm.
Is Jimmy Butler better as a primary defender, or is he better as your star?
Mind you, just
with Philly,
right? And I mean, I'll say that game two was probably an outlier, because how often are you going to score 145 points? So let's say, you know, you're looking at about 105 points. Obviously, a lot of that production is going to be down from maybe not your star players and, you know, Simmons bench. And at least your bench and
Mike Scott 15, Marjanovic 16.
You know, and Tobias is probably going to get you like 13 to 14, Redick somewhere in that range as well. Jimmy doesn't need to give you 30. Having someone who can create their shot probably even more so efficiently than Tobias Harris can, and he can get to the line and he can kind of get whatever he wants at any point, I think that's a very important to have. You got to have someone that's going to be able to truly close games. We haven't seen Embiid do it enough, I should say. Simmons can't close games because he doesn't have a full repertoire that he's working with right now.
Right. And especially, you can't always get to the lane, so sometimes you have to take a shot.
Right. And I trust Jimmy more than anyone else on that squad right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it just depends on how the flow of the game is going. I don't think that if Jimmy doesn't get 25, you can't win. They obviously showed that.
Yeah.
But you can't afford to phase Jimmy out either. He needs to be some sort of focus in the offense at some point. He needs to have his spurts where he's the dude, you know?
Yeah.
So what are you guys' picks on this series?
I say Philly in six.
I honestly had Philly sweeping. Obviously, they didn't.
They can't sweep no more?
Nah, they got to leave the floor dirty, bro.
I think Brooklyn can pull off at least one game at home, so I'm going to go Philly in six as well.
You know what? I'm going to say Philly in seven. I'm going to say Philly in seven just because it's been such a roller coaster, and the Nets played well in a game that I think is more like playoff basketball.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Philly's going to be able to do what they did in game two for the rest of the series. They need to prove to me that they can win you know, a 98-92 game. I think the Nets have the better coaching edge right now, and they have so many different ways to attack you offensively, defensively, that I think they're going to make it very interesting. But Philly will prevail just because they have the stars to make the plays. So that's why I say Philly in seven. So the last series we got to talk about is Boston and Indiana. I mean, I don't think that Boston is back from winning game one. This isn't going to be very telling because Indiana, although they've had a great year.
No Vic.
No Oladipo, right. There's only so far that you can go. So, I mean, I commend them for getting as far as they have. But I never expected them to make noise. Yeah.
Like
they were in the same range without Oladipo.
I think they were three when he went out. Now you're five. That's commendable.
Yeah. They definitely did their thing this season. So, I mean, Nate McMillan's done a great job.
Yes.
When you look at Indiana's roster, they have a very good team, you know, which makes you wonder if they had Oladipo in this spot, you know, Boston would be potentially looking at, you know, losing in the first round. I think it'd be much more realistic, but
I could have seen Boston losing in seven if Victor Oladipo was playing.
Yeah. Oh no, I could see that happening.
I feel like we've been trying to learn about Boston all season. If we haven't figured out who they are yet, I don't think this series is really going to give us a clearer definition. Hopefully Boston can figure out who they are and figure out a solid rotation. I don't think we will. I don't think we'll learn too much about Boston this series, honestly. It's going to be the same inconsistency, but they're good enough to be able to make it through to the following round, so they're going to make it there.
Honestly, if Boston allows this series to go beyond five games, I think what we're going to learn from them is they're going to lose in the second round. If you can't beat this Indiana team in five games or less, because as you stated, you know, they still have good players. Bogdanovich, Young, Turner, Wesley Matthews, Collison, Sabonis, Corey Joseph, Tyreek Evans. Shut up.
But, oh, he's not a good player. All right.
But, I mean, not since he left Lonzo Ball's hip. But,
yeah.
But these are good basketball players.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really see the same dog in them that I see in the Clippers, but a game at home against a Boston team who really hasn't had an identity all year. You have certain games where Kyrie will have 34-4, and you have another game where he has 28-12. So it's like, what type of point guard are you? Jason Tatum, are you really the second best player on the team? Jaylen Brown, are you happy with being designated to a primary defender and just get your shots when, you know, when we pass you the ball? You know, Al Horford, can you rebound consistently finally in the postseason? I personally don't like the fact that they only scored 84 points. This isn't the 80s.
Defensively, I mean, they did their thing, which I think is always important.
Right. You hold somebody to 74 points, but you hold a team of role players to 74 points.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you're supposed to do that.
Right.
So that's why I feel like if this series goes beyond five, to me, it shows that you're going to lose in the following round. It's going to show that Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward coming back may have hurt this team more than it helped it.
Right.
I think some moves this offseason are definitely going to be needed, and I think they're going to make the incorrect moves based on some people's contracts, some people's names.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Brad Stevens is going to be okay with Gordon Hayward getting traded, but I think he got to get out of there. I don't know if letting go of Jaylen Brown is the best move. People forget Jaylen Brown was actually the best player on that team last year in the postseason. It was not Jason Tatum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they've diminished his role greatly. If I'm his agent, I'm trying to get him out of there. I don't know if that would be the best move for Boston. I really like Jaylen Brown. You know, him and Marcus Smart together, that's just...
Yeah, and I know...
That's intimidating.
And
man,
I know Marcus Smart, you know, has been out
he didn't play.
So that's a huge issue. That's like...
Because when he comes back, who's minutes?
Like, right.
Baines?
I'm not going to diminish, you know, Marcus Smart's impact because... And don't think about the in terms of production, you know, when I make this comparison, but he is their Draymond Green.
Yes.
You know, that's what he means to the
and
team
honestly,
in terms
I think
of intensity
he might have
and
to
energy.
Go as well, because I think you I think this offseason there's going to be a decision made. Do you keep Marcus Smart or do you keep Terry Rozier?
Yeah.
Terry Rozier might be a little cheaper because of what you did to him this season.
Right.
I think Marcus Smart might leave.
Yeah. I was looking forward to the postseason for Boston for a couple of reasons. And I guess I'll kind of respond to your point earlier where you said that if the series goes beyond five, you know, pretty much there's only bad things to learn about Boston. So I think I agree. There's nothing really good to learn or nothing good that's going to come out of this series in terms of we feel that much better about Boston now. I was really hoping that Brad Stevens would find it in him to cut Gordon Hayward's minutes.
Yes.
Because it's necessary for the team.
Yes.
You know, I was like, exactly. How would you feel about playing Gordon Hayward 15 minutes?
Because he got 30.
Yeah. And that's not in the best interest of the team, in my opinion.
He played more minutes than Jaylen Brown, more minutes than Morris, more minutes than Rozier.
And everybody else
was like 2 or 4 minutes.
And you rode all of those guys to an Eastern Conference Finals appearance.
Right. To a game seven.
Yeah, to a game seven.
The best player in the world.
Minutes away from making it to an NBA Finals.
I mean, they lost by single digits, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Yeah. No, it was like, if it ended up being like an 8-point game or something like that, yeah. I think. But still, they were within minutes of making it to the NBA Finals.
Right. And now you're going with a guy who I know hasn't been out of the second round.
Yeah, and Gordon, he's not quite there mentally, and it shows. You know, they're not getting the fringe all-star, you know, in the West that I think they were expecting, where he was going to definitively be an all-star in the East.
Yeah.
They're not getting that, and I get it because he went through a gruesome injury. There's a recovery period that comes from that. So I don't want to say Gordon Hayward's not good enough because that's not a problem, but it's the issue of him fitting into this rotation right now, playing 30 minutes a night, is not in the best interest of the team.
And that's definitely, there's a mental aspect to that as well. I think Paul George has gotten over it. He's fine. I don't know if Gordon Hayward, it's weird. Like, he just doesn't look the same.
Mm-mm. And it's not like Gordon Hayward is that young either. He's about maybe 28 right now.
He's old enough.
Yeah, he's old enough. But yeah, I mean, he's just not quite there. And to be giving someone, you know, you drafted so well, you should reward yourself by giving those players more minutes and allow them to develop and grow. Why would you want to, you know, give Gordon Hayward these minutes and now potentially limit or, you know, stunt Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown's growth or Terry Rozier's growth, Marcus Smart's growth? I understand you pay Gordon Hayward, you know, a max contract, but okay, you figure something out. He hasn't earned those 30 minutes. You know, you got to think about championships. You can't think about salaries when you're setting rotations on the court. You got to think about what's in the best interest of the team. And having Tatum in there, having Brown in there, having Rozier, having Smart, that's in the best interest of the team.
Yeah. Honestly, exactly. What I'm afraid of is Indiana making some sort of an adjustment that exposes them and leads to a 6-7 game series.
Mm-hmm.
At least the two of you know I'm a Sacramento Kings fan.
Yeah.
I'm saying it every show. I don't care. Tyreke Evans can still play. I don't know why Wesley Matthews is starting over Tyreke Evans. I don't know who said Tyreke Evans is a better bench player.
Probably.
If you just put him in the game and just let him play, because you have to run your offense through somebody.
Yeah.
Why not go with the rookie of the year? 25-5. Only four or five of us did it, man. I think
Rookie of the Year is lightweight overrated, though. Michael Carter Williams was Rookie of the Year.
Look, Michael Carter Williams had a good rookie year.
And who's he playing for right now?
I don't know. Charlotte? Nobody.
Orlando.
The one in one.
Hey, the team that beat Toronto.
Yeah, yeah.
The team that beat my team.
You know, part of the only reason I knew that? Because he had a bloody nose because he got slapped in the face. Yeah.
Look at how your career went.
Yeah. But anyway, I didn't mean to throw you off like that.
No. But honestly, I think just when I look at, you know, who played, who did what. I mean, as we stated, no Victor Oladipo, so you have no guy. Run with Tyreke, see what happens. And I would like to see it happen because I just want to see if Tyreke still got it. I know I'm saying he can play, but it's just hope for me.
Yeah.
But I think that might be bad for Boston. If they really find that guy, that somebody that just steps up like, all right, I got y'all, that can get bad for Boston. Because to have your opponent figure themselves out while you're still trying to, how do you respond to that?
So final picks for the series. I got Boston in six, honestly. What do you guys think?
I'm gonna say Boston in four. Hopefully.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with the hopeful, sweep.
And I'm gonna say them in four.
Okay. All right, interesting. Well,
I think their defense is solid enough to keep Indy in the fringes of not being able to keep up with them because they don't have the offensive firepower.
No, I mean, I definitely, you know, see both of your guys' points there. So it wouldn't surprise me if it's sweet, but for some reason, six just stands out.
Why do you think it'll be a six-game
series? I think it's going to be six because I could see Indiana winning game two in Boston. I've seen guys like Bogdanovich get hot. I've seen him drop, you know, 37 points, you know, in a key game. Mm-hmm. So I could see them stealing one in Boston. And maybe if it's not even game two, I could see them potentially winning game five in Boston. And I see them winning at least one at home, whether that's three or four. So they're going to win one of these next two games in Boston, and then they're going to win either three or four, probably more so three in Indiana. They probably won't win these games consecutively. I don't see them taking like any sort of lead in the series. So they're either going to win game two and then win game four, or they're going to win game three and win game five. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're not going to win two in a row, I don't think. Mm-hmm. All right. So, I mean, that wraps up all of our playoff discussion, but hopefully, we'll revisit next week and, you know, some of these series will be all closed up and others may be, you know, still going on to games five, six, and seven. So, you know, let's see what the future series and everything hold for us.
Yeah, your Spurs are about to lose game two.
Bruh, don't tell me.
Score is 114-103 with a minute left.
Well, that's all right. We got one on the road. So, you know, we did what we needed to do, ultimately.
You got to get two on the road.
We'll get one later. Don't trip. Don't trip off that. Well, actually... No, you don't need to get two on the road. Yeah, we got three at home.
And their third home game going to come before Denver's fourth.
So all we got to do is just win at home now, and that's a wrap. Because
that's going to be game seven.
Facts. Oh, we're going to do that. So let's talk about Russell Wilson. Let's talk about his contract. So he had given the Seahawks a deadline of April 15th to have a deal done. It looked like potentially that deal wasn't going to be met, and it looked like, you know, I heard the stories coming out. Well, what's his future? You know, does he want to go to the Giants? Yeah. You know, things like that. But they got the deal done. So we're looking at 4 years of new money, $140
million.
$165 million of that guaranteed.
This is what I want to know. If they would have gotten the deal done, because it got done yesterday at the deadline, right?
Mm-hmm.
What if I say I'm doing it on Tuesday? What are you going to do?
We don't know. We don't know.
Because he's still under contract.
Just not re-sign. I think he's going to make them wait it out too.
You know what? I'll trade you to the Giants because they're going to mess up your career. And they still got Eli.
Would they?
What? I don't. You trust the Giants over what they've been doing lately?
You get a. I feel like Russell Wilson is a franchise-changing player.
No, he definitely is. I think he brings a winning culture to your organization. Maybe not necessarily championships by himself, but I think he can change the culture, especially with a franchise like New York.
I still don't know.
Where he has a solid running game behind him.
Yeah, very solid.
Unfortunately, no Odell, but Sterling Shepard did just receive a contract extension.
He has experience throwing the Golden Tate.
Exactly.
That would have been interesting, but I think it was good for Seattle to lock him up and not have to worry about talking about his contract during the rest of the season. That just would have caused problems.
Petty me would have got it done on Tuesday. Like, I'm sorry, I'm grown. You're not finna tell me when I have to get something done. I'll do it the next day.
And the thing is, I know there are, you know, GMs and owners that are petty like that. But guess what? The petty ones usually end up on the wrong side of history. You know, I mean, they decide to be petty and, you know, their player didn't resign with them and they had to trade them and get, you know, pennies on the dollar. Dan Gilbert is petty.
Who needs a quarterback?
The Giants.
Jacksonville.
They got Nick Foles. I believe in Foles.
Jacksonville. Who really needs a quarterback?
You know, if he was available on the trade market, I would want the Broncos to give like a second, third, and like sixth round
pick
for him.
Who did they just get?
Joe Flacco. But I would take Russell Wilson for the next 5 years. Over Flacco for the next two.
Yeah, the guy who just got let go by his franchise. Yeah. Well, he was the guy, of course.
Yeah, we shouldn't have traded anything for him, to be real. But, you know, that's a whole other topic.
Bro, I give you these Doritos I got in the car.
Flaming hot nacho?
Nah, the bag already open.
Yeah. All right, deal. All right, but, yes, I mean, shout out Russell Wilson for getting that money. He's the new highest paid player over Aaron Rodgers. We kind of talked about this a little bit off air. Being the highest paid player really doesn't mean anything because the market's always growing. It's always evolving. Yeah. So next year it's going to be what?
Last year was Aaron Rodgers.
You know, Dak's going to end up being the highest paid player probably.
I swear he better not.
And you know what?
He shouldn't.
That's going to be terrible.
He better not be.
If he is, the Cowboys are doomed for the next five to 10 years.
They're doomed for they're doomed, period.
He better not be. He better get a solid, you know, $80 million extension.
Yeah.
$22
million. Get that
guaranteed.
Done.
No exactly. Guarantees.
Honestly, I've thought about that. Like, the way people want to use guaranteed contracts, like Kirk Cousins did something remarkable by getting a fully guaranteed contract. I kind of like what Minnesota did. I mean, they made a mistake, clearly. Yeah. But I like what they did by shortening it in years. Mm-hmm. You want a lot of money? All right, it's only going to be 3 years at the most.
Right. I mean, I think that this Kirk Cousins contract backfired because all it did was just reset the market and just pretty much prove to players and GMs, see, this is why we don't do guaranteed contracts.
Exactly.
Therefore,
and nobody else got one.
Yes, it's going to go back to how it was. This isn't going to set a precedent and say, hey, now everyone's going to get fully guaranteed contracts. Mm. Kirk Cousins was the wrong person to start the trend.
Kirk Cousins and Aaron Rodgers overrated since his losing seasons in Washington.
Yeah. Yeah, because they always got to blame it on the rest of the
overrated.
Team.
Overrated.
Yeah, but they always got to blame it, you know, blame it on the rest of the team. But a lot of it was on Kirk Cousins. But, yes, I mean, anyway, whole another topic. But shout out Russell Wilson for getting his money. The Seahawks are going to be a formidable team for the next, you know, 4 years at least.
I mean, the conference isn't really.
I don't know about that.
Division. The division really isn't that good.
Nah, so they'll always be a second or third best team. Yeah, they'll be in the playoff mix every year.
So, I mean, so you got them, you got LA. You didn't have the 49ers last year because Garoppolo got hurt early, and Arizona was just terrible. So, I mean, yes, Russell Wilson had an amazing season when you consider touchdowns versus interceptions. They had the number one rushing defense. I'm sorry, number one rushing offense in the league. So, yes, it looked amazing. But I just don't know what he's going to be on that team with those defensive players that really turn that franchise around.
Right.
And no offensive stars next to him. What he's going to be when those other teams improve.
Exactly. I'll give them between 7 and 9 wins, somewhere in that range. You know, and they'll be one of those teams that's like 7 and 9, but they're a tough 7 and 9 team. You know what I mean? Like, had a couple other games gone their way, they would have been 10 and 6. You know what I mean? I could see them being.
Yeah, they'll be like in a wild card hunt position for most of the season.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Isn't that how they got in last year? Through the wild card?
Yeah, last year they were wild card.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I feel like they're going to be on the fringe of that. Like, they might be a wild card. They'll likely be a 6 seed or lower.
Yeah, so I'm saying you give them a couple more competitive games within their division.
Yeah.
That's why I don't know if that was really – I don't know if that was smart.
Yeah, but when you have no other option, you either – overpay or you just pay who you have. And I think that's what happened here.
Me, I'm not a fan of quarterbacks receiving so much praise, receiving such high pay. I would prefer to build a team with an average quarterback who I can win with versus investing all my time, all my money, all my assets into a quarterback who I feel like can win me a game and then I don't win. And the first thing they're going to do is look at me and say, well, I ain't got no receivers. I don't have a running back. I don't have an offensive line. What do you want me to do? I want you to win. You the one who asked for all that money. And now you mad at me because I ain't put nobody around you. I would rather just build a great team. No, and just find somebody who's good enough to win with.
Like a Jared Goff.
But I know,
like Jared Goff, man.
I know just a lot of teams, ever want to just break down and rebuild because jobs are on the line because of that. So you'd much rather just be middle of the road.
You can't trust the process in football.
Exactly. It's much harder to trust the process in football than it is in basketball. And I think a lot of GMs are going to be much more conservative because they don't have much time.
It seems like you don't got enough time in the NBA sometimes too.
It's true. I mean, every sports league.
Got these NBA franchises with 5 coaches in 8 years. Who do you expect to come in here and build any type of chemistry or consistency?
Right.
Man, it's always a new philosophy in here every year.
No kidding.
Russell Wilson got a big contract. I congratulate him for it. I don't agree with the decision, but kudos to my black man.
Yeah, kudos to Russell Wilson. Do your thing. You got your money. Congratulations.
Oh, also, we didn't mention Luke Walton got hired 2 days after he got fired.
You know what? We were trying to avoid that. Right. Like I said, I'm a Kings fan. I don't like that. Was terrible. We're getting the number 3 overall pick next year.
No, you're not.
We're gonna be terrible next year.
Oh, next year. Sorry, I thought you meant.
This draft we might get 11, but no, next year I think we're gonna be terrible. I think that was a really, really bad decision. That was a political move because he was popular. Dave Yeager did not do that bad to where he should have got fired.
Yeah, I mean, their best season in 13 years.
I mean, they did fire Dwayne Casey after winning regular season record.
George Karl, too, same thing.
Exactly. So it happens, but it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but I mean, the Kings are just a dysfunctional organization. I think they made that clear. And it comes from leadership. You finally found a coach who was able to get through to Boogie Cousins and you fire him. Yes. You have George Karl had his issues there. So I won't necessarily say that was just, how do you let go of George Karl? But still, probably the best coach that they've had since, Adelman. Yes. And you fire him. And then, you finally have, your best year. You were consistently in the playoff race for about 3/4 of the season.
Yeah, for most of it. And I think the young guys just kind of cracked under pressure, which I'm not going to blame on the coach.
Or they just tire out because they're not used to playing that many competitive games.
Yeah, meaningful games.
And you fire him.
And then Bagley did get hurt for a little bit. Yeah. He missed a couple games.
So some of the other biggest news over the weekend. So is Tiger back or did he never leave?
I would say Tiger's back. There's a complete difference between what he did the other day and what he's been doing since that scandal. I think Tiger's finally cleared his head. I say he gets probably like two more majors. Next couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, that whole incident was 10 years ago, which is crazy. Yeah, sometimes 10 years already.
I mean, whoever put a timeline on clearing your mental head or your mental space, it takes forever.
Well, it wasn't necessarily that. It was that his body was breaking down too.
I think a lot of that was major
back injuries.
His physical breakdown did play a part on it, but I think sometimes it's life.
Mm-hmm.
It's decisions and popularity and money and endorsements and fame and love. Like, these are things that can drive a person insane, or like people can build their world around it.
Right.
Like, he had it for so long and then you really just lose all of that. Like, he was just a different person to me.
Yeah.
I didn't see Tiger Woods smile for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, he went through some real deep stuff, some hard stuff. I mean, I think I was nostalgic kind of following. I didn't get to really watch the final round of the Masters, but just kind of following along because you could get the feeling that everyone that was kind of in play for winning, they all start to tighten up. What I mean? Because, hey, Tiger's in the mix. But we haven't had that feeling in so long.
Man.
It got to the point where people weren't afraid of Tiger anymore. So even if he was hanging around a couple strokes back from the league, whatever. But now it's like, literally like,
Tiger's
about to make his run, and now you start to reach and you start to get out of your game. And it's good to have that feeling. You know, Tiger, he had that hold over the sport of golf for like 13 years, you know what I mean? And then to have it just all of a sudden go away after, you know, he goes through his personal issues and through injuries and stuff. It was just good to see that back. I think that's good for, golf, obviously, because what is golf without Tiger Woods? You know, they've been looking for that star this whole time. They thought it was going to be Rory McIlroy. They thought it was going to be, you know, Dustin Johnson. They thought it was going to be Ricky Fowler, Bubba Watson. Yeah, Brooks Koepka. But none of them could carry it like Tiger could. So this is just good for the entire world of sports, you know, having Tiger back.
Does he get all of his endorsements back now?
Well, he's had them back for a while now.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a good percentage of them back. Wait, I mean,
one,
I think...
Which one did he keep? Was it Gatorade or Nike? One of them, I think it was Nike. I think
he Gatorade kept Nike.
Yeah.
He got all those, like he got Gatorade back and everything.
I'd have to look into it a little more. Whether or not. For sure.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, well, that's, better
at
question.
At the end of the day, that's just Coca-Cola.
Better question.
Yeah, right.
Is he forgiven? Winning trumps everything. Nobody cares about that rape case. I'm sorry. Nobody cares about Kobe Bryant rape case. Got you two more championships.
No, I think winning does cure everything, and people will. We were already involved in something that wasn't our business. You know what I mean? Ultimately, so I think people will now be more willing to let bygones be bygones, or at least a significant percentage of people. Some people will never forget, and they'll hold it against them forever. You know, i.e. Michael Vick, i.e. Kobe. But the overall, you know, feeling towards it isn't going to be, oh, well, remember all that dirt that Tiger did in 2009 when it all came out? I remember him in his lowest moment, and I'm going to hold it against him forever. I think people are just going to be glad that he's back to greatness. So, Shout out, Tiger.
Of course, there are those people who obviously don't forgive, you know,
just when those ignorant
Vic was back
people,
in the league.
Feminists.
You know, people who just didn't want to.
Yeah,
a lot, you know,
nobody cares.
They can't see that someone has grown or someone has changed. It's just like, all right, you were who you were, and this is how I'm going to choose to see you versus, you know, allowing opportunity for growth. So it's just.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's just, you still have those people who obviously haven't forgiven, people who are still going to be mad that he's even golfing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he should be banned or whatever.
And I mean, that's just a matter, to me, that's just a matter of where people are at, you know, in their own lives, as opposed to what Tiger has actually done.
Exactly.
So, you know, let the people be in their own heads and, you know, whatever, but, you know, let Tiger get back to greatness. You know, we'll never know all the hard work and, you know, just the, you know, mind clearing and everything that's gone into him even getting to this moment, which I think
four back surgeries.
Right. Which I think he'll look back and say, you know what, this has been one of his favorite majors that he's ever won, because it means so much more. It's more than just about golf. It's more than just about, you know, being able to put on that green jacket for him. So I definitely think that he will, he'll definitely embrace this one much more, because this is about life more so than it is about, you know, one major championship. So shout out Tiger. Hopefully there's more to come from him. I think there will be,
most definitely.
Man, did this dude just did this?
So we're gonna get out of here real quick. We just got a couple things to go over. So first things first, did y'all see Ricky Rubio's defense on James Harden? I know we referenced it earlier, but if you guys haven't seen the clip, just go search it, Ricky Rubio against James Harden. I'll probably put it on our Instagram as well, so you guys can check it out.
You can honestly just YouTube Ricky Rubio, James Harden.
Yeah, so.
Game one.
Yeah, so Ricky Rubio, they had this great strategy of, you know what, we're going to try to take away James Harden's left hand. But as the play starts to progress, Ricky Rubio ends up guarding James Harden from behind.
Literally
from behind, so that he can't go left, yet he dribbled with his right hand and then went back to his left hand. There were people that were defending this on Instagram, Facebook, everything, saying, no, this is legitimately great defense because he kicked the ball out to Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon missed a three. So they're saying that's great defense. And people were legitimately saying, like, only real hoopers know that's good defense. You guys don't know what you're talking about.
Passing the ball. I'm sorry. One, allowing me to penetrate. And then passing the ball to an open shooter. Like, right. Eric Gordon is a shooter. I didn't pass it to Clint Capella at the three. I passed it to Eric Gordon. And he just missed it. Yeah, and he just missed it.
Exactly.
That was a good offensive play. You took advantage of what the defense gave you. You saw open man. You passed it when the center collapsed on you, and he just missed the shot.
Right.
That was not good defense from Ricky Rubio. That was good defense from Rudy Gobert forcing a pass.
Right.
And it was, you know, a good closeout. He was wide open when he caught the ball, but he closed out well.
Yeah.
Ricky Rubio, if you look at, if you look at those three Jazz defenders, Ricky Rubio did the worst job.
Oh, yeah. By far.
On that play.
You could have done the exact same thing had you been in front of him, and he could have still kicked it out to Eric Gordon. But right. Mitchell wouldn't have had to sink down as far because Capella wouldn't have had to jump up as soon as he did. Or not Capella, but Gobert wouldn't have had to rotate as soon as he did.
Right, because James Harden can dribble and get you off balance and drive past Ricky Rubio anytime he feels like it. All you did was just ole and say, you know, just go.
Right.
Just do what you're going to do. Just go.
Yeah.
Sure, you can have the lane.
Exactly. So, and let's be real, you know, the Rockets won by 20-plus points. So, if that's your strategy, I guess they're trying to take an early vacation. I'm not quite sure what the Jazz are trying to do. So, next up, Derek White. I know you guys saw him baptize Paul Millsap in game one. I think my favorite part of the dunk was the bench's reaction. And not the Spurs bench reaction. No, the Nuggets. The Nuggets. Because do you guys remember when Lonnie Walker, he went up for that big layup, but he should have dunked it. And, like, the Nuggets bench, they keyed in on them. And they were all, like, you know, holding each other, like, all shocked. They're like, he got up so high. Because he should have yammed on him. He should have yammed on him. But, you know, laid it up, missed the layup, whatever, got fouled. But the bench's reaction, like, they all, like, had to turn their heads away. You know what I mean? Like, they just saw the boogeyman or something. Like, they wanted to
start keying in on them a lot next year.
Yeah. So, shout out to the Nuggets. You guys are the worst bench in the league. You guys do not support your teammates at all. Man. That was a heck of a dunk, though. Derek White's underrated. But, and Paul Millsap, just, you got to do better, man. You got to do better.
I still love you, Paul, though. I still love Paul Millsap. Yeah.
All right, so the last thing we got, if you guys remember, we did ask you guys a poll question from last episode. At the end, we talked about if Russell Westbrook and Draymond Green were overrated. We posted the poll on Instagram, and the results are in. So we asked, is Russell Westbrook overrated? 11% said yes. 89% said no. Do you guys think they got that right?
I don't like
the 11%?
I think the 89% got it right. I think the NBA players got it wrong. I think sometimes you can be a little too close to the situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, those same NBA players said that Kobe Bryant is the third greatest basketball player of all time simply because of his mental,
because he's an killer assassin.
Instinct. Yeah. Like, that's all you base it off of. Sometimes I feel like when you're a fan, you just have a wider aspect. Like, you just think about more. Mm-hmm. Now, when you play, you can look at it from an angle that we can't. Yeah. And I appreciate that. But I don't think the conversation just ends with whatever they're viewing to have Russell Westbrook listed as the most overrated player.
So, Connie, what do you think about that? Did the people get it right? Did the fans get it right?
Or did the players?
I think the fans did get it right. I think what it is with players sometimes is that players pay attention to calls that they don't get and calls that they do get from refs. And I think what it is that they recognize Russell gets, you know, more calls in his favor than they do. Russell is just a bit more of he's constantly in the, you know, in the headlines, tabloids, for things that are not basketball related, even though he's like balling out on the court.
Thing with the fan, little kid that touched.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. A lot of times, and with so his clothes.
Because he's constantly seen as like this player who's getting into it either with officials or getting into it with fans, getting into it with getting into it with whoever, he doesn't generally get the brunt of the blame whenever something wrong happens. If there's somebody who's in the wrong, he doesn't get the most times he's not the one who's blamed for whatever it is. And I think as a player who might have a vote, it's like, well, he's always getting calls in his favor, and if I was able to get the calls that he got, or if I had a team that was based around me, you know, rebounding and, you know, bringing the ball up floor, it would allow me to put these numbers as well. But because he's in a position to do so, you know, he's doing it. So, you know, it's more of a hate than really a reflection of the fact that it doesn't matter whether or not he's in a position, in a system to be able to do it or not. The fact is, he's doing it. They don't have any, nobody else is able to, we haven't seen anybody, I'll say, do the things that Russell has done the past three seasons. From a fan standpoint, I think it's a lot more exciting to see than a player standpoint when this is a guy that you have to, you know, you're competing with on so many different levels, and competition breeds envy. I think a lot of it is envy versus really feeling like he's overrated.
I get that. I mean,
Draymond, on the other hand.
At one point in time, I think a lot of people would have said Steph Curry was overrated too because of his, like, the hate that they have for him.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Sakani, you brought up Draymond. So let's get to what the people had to say about Draymond. So the people said that 57% believe that Draymond is overrated. 43% believe that he is not overrated. That's a very, it's a very interesting take. I personally believe that Draymond is slightly overrated, maybe not drastically overrated. Maybe not drastically overrated, but I definitely think he's overrated nonetheless. So quickly, what do you guys think about that?
I think they both got it right. Definitely overrated, especially as of late. Draymond Green, at the beginning of the season, somebody that I said does not need to be an all-star every single season. So I'm happy that he was not, and I do not believe that he is as good as he used to be. Anybody who does, overrates him.
I agree. exactly.
Do we have another poll question for the people?
Who's the favorite to come out the East as a poll? Just do the top four, Boston, okay. Philly, Toronto, Milwaukee.
Yeah, all right, then yeah, we'll do that. So coming out of the East, who is the favorite? So just like Carl said, we're looking at Boston, we're looking at Toronto, looking at Philly or Milwaukee. We won't really talk about the West because the West is pretty straightforward. It's limited to just a couple teams or maybe just one team. But yeah, so we'll ask that poll. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at FanCulturePod. If you're listening from the Anchor app, leave us voice messages. Make sure to subscribe and favorite the app. We're on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all that good stuff. Just make sure to check us out on your favorite platform. Hopefully next week we'll have all four of the squad here. Then we'll get some.
Get one of them in.
Yeah, we'll get some real live action in here. Sakani, thanks for tuning in this time. We're just excited to have you. We can't wait till the next episode. You know, showing us love all the way from New York City. You know, we're just glad to have, you know, all of us here together and be able to do this moving forward.
Yes, yes, yes. I was happy to have my bro here.
Yeah. All right, well, y'all got anything else for the people?
That's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
All right, it's a wrap.
Look forward to some baseball talk next time.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to have some baseball talk coming, too. We're going to have a little bit coming. There's some interesting stuff going on in the baseball world, and, you know, we got fans out there that want to hear about that, too. So we'll make sure to get some more out about that, too. All right, well, till next time, y'all. Peace.
Peace.
For sure.